So for the record, this is Justin Barr interviewing Mr. Mo on Thursday, 22 February, 2007, in Durham, North Carolina.
Durham, right.
So to start, would you just state your full name and your date of birth, sir?
James Charles Mo, 92334.
And you were born where?
In Douglas, Wyoming.
And then you moved to Iowa after that?
Moved to Iowa at the age of one. And then spent, lived in Iowa for 18 years.
Where'd you go to school?
Iowa State.
And you graduated in?
What year? 1957.
With a degree in?
Business and sociology.
And you joined the Marines after that, sir?
Yes.
And you did your training?
Pensacola. Went to Quantico for officer's training and then Pensacola for high school.
I know we talked about this over breakfast, sir, but what were you flying?
Well, I fly in the fixed wing, playing football, and the football season went over, so I then went into helicopters and got hurt playing football, dislocated my shoulder, but I was grounded for a while, went to air traffic control school, and then after that I flew stationary.
And after you got out of the Marines, where did you go, sir?
I went to Rochester, Minnesota with Scientific Products.
And what year was this?
What year?
Yes, sir. Roughly.
61.
And how long did you spend in Rochester?
15 months.
And you, from there you moved to?
Durham.
What brought you here?
The job in the medical outpatient clinic.
At?
Director.
At Duke University?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was in 1962? 63. How'd you hear about that job, sir?
A friend of mine from high school, or from college, Journey Brother, was down here and had gotten the job through the Duke Endowment and had gotten a promotion, so he called me and I was going to go to the FBI. I had accepted the FBI. And he said, come down and look at this, and we came down and my wife certainly would rather be here than with the FBI.
So how did you get involved with the Dr. Stead and the PA program?
Dr. Stead was chairman of medicine.
Right.
And as chairman of medicine, he was over the medical outpatient clinic. So I got to know him through my work in the medical outpatient clinic. And after I'd been there 24 months or so, he asked me if I would be interested in working with him in developing a new allied health profession. And I said, yes, I would. So I joined the Department of Medicine as the sort of the liaison between Dr. Stead and the allied health opportunity.
And that was in
1965. I was there probably 6 months before the program started.
Can you talk about how the program began, or what perspective you saw from the program initiating?
Well, he was, as he is in a lot of his ideas, vague when we talked about it. He said, you know, I think there needs to be a career path for men in the healthcare industry below that of a physician. And at the same time, there are a lot of corpsmen getting out of the service. That was during a downsizing of the military. And there are a lot of corpsmen getting out, but they couldn't get into the healthcare industry at the delivery level in a role that paid them enough so they could make a living. Mm-hmm. So he said, that's my idea. And we'll develop it together, and we'll develop it with guidance of people, other people. And there was one doctor, and he went with IBM, and I'm blanking on his name, who had done some research on the Felcher system in Russia. And he came, and we talked to him. And that sounded about the level of entry that we're talking about. They're a little more independent than we thought the PA would be. We always thought the PA would dependent member of the, dependent on the physician for his license, and dependent on the physician for your assignment of tasks. So we then start building the concept. We had one other physician, Dr. Bill DeMaria, pediatrician, who had contacts at Fort Bragg, and said that there's a unique group of corpsmen, you know, special forces, who are sort of independent, and that they're out on their own, and they can't rely on the physician and such, to deliver health care in an emergency situation. We ought to go look at them. So we made a trip to Fort Bragg.
What year was that, sir?
65, I think.
Do you remember anybody you met down there?
No, trying to think of it. As I mentioned, the physician, a lieutenant, or a captain in the Army, was a very charismatic and attractive guy, and did a nice job of explaining the program to us. Spent the day with us. As I also said, we had the advantage of having Dr. Stead with us, and the physician obviously knew of him, mm-hmm. and was anxious to show him what he had in the BA, in the corpsman program there.
Do you remember some of the things you all discussed?
Well, we discussed the philosophy, and that these were taken beyond the corpsman program to deal with battle wounds that could be life-threatening in a way that the average corpsman couldn't deal with them. They were trained to perform procedures and to perform first aid on the battlefield that the normal corpsman didn't have skills in.
Was there any discussion on curricula specifics?
No. Not that I remember. Right. That's, again, 42 years ago. So I'm sure we did, because we talked all day and came home that night. But we talked about the classroom or the work with animals.
The dog lab?
Yeah.
Did you all have a dog lab in the PA program initially?
No, we didn't. Well, they did some anatomy on cadavers.
Right.
Certainly no dog.
There's no any type of surgery in animals at all, sir?
In the PA program, no. Mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly where they developed suturing skills, but I don't remember animals being involved.
So how did the curriculum for the PA initially develop that first year or two?
Well, after we got our ideas somewhat finalized, we realized that we needed money. And at that time, the hyperbaric program was expanding from a single tank to a major hyperbaric facility. And Dr. Stead thought that this was a unique opportunity to develop a class of paramedics who could work in a hyperbaric chamber, providing medical care and other skills that is unique because of the confinements of a hyperbaric chamber. So he got Dr. Herbert Saltzman, who was the director of the hyperbaric chamber, to write a grant to the Heart Institute to fund training for PAs to work in hyperbaric and for chamber operators, both of whom were currently supplied by corpsmen and military, Navy chamber operators. The grant was submitted and got funded, after some help from Dr. Hickam, who was chairman of the Heart Council. And it was in that grant that they established a two-year program, two-year stipend. And after we got the funding, we then sat down to define, more closely define, the curriculum. And Dr. Ward Smith, who was a member of the Department of Surgery and was also co-director and co-technical director of the hyperbaric facility, and I sat in his lab one afternoon and designed the core curriculum. And we thought that the average academic year is 9 months, so we would have a 9-month didactic program. And then we had 15 more months to use, so we had 15 months of clinical experience. And I don't remember exact thought of what, how we broke down the didactic, but we thought they needed to know certain things, anatomy, physiology, some chemistry. So we set up the curriculum and went about recruiting faculty. And another member of the faculty of the hyperbaric facility was Hans Kilstra, who's world's international famous for having dogs submerged in water survived under hyperbaria. And anyway, he was new to the faculty and had some time. So Dr. Stead asked him to teach some anatomy and physiology, mostly physiology. The anatomy, I think we got someone from the Department of Pathology to teach anatomy. Chemistry, as I mentioned, we started the program, didn't have anybody teach it, and I thought, well, I could give them a couple lessons of basic chemistry. But after a couple lessons, I found out that they exceeded my knowledge, so we hired a person from the VA who was a chemist in the VA, Johnson, and he taught the chemistry for the first year. Then the didactic portion, or the clinical portion, we again went to Dr. Stead and say, you know, we need some help in getting this done. We couldn't pay the mentors. So he, again, using his leverage, we identified people in various clinical areas, and we actually went into town and got Roy Isler, a local internist, to have one in his office. And so we placed them, we tried to give them experience in various areas, internal medicine, OBGYN, surgery. It was easier in medicine because of Stead's involvement. Mm-hmm. But he did sign some residents to teach physical diagnosis, and he did sign some residents to teach the clinical, and some faculty members teach the clinical.
How much of this curriculum, if any, came from that day at Bragg?
Don't know. Mm. Don't know. I really can't tie back to that.
And I did come across one interview in Bragg where they were saying that Dr. Stead was making some job offers to some people down there to come up to Duke. Do you remember any of that, or?
No, the only thing I remember was that we found the captain who talked to us very attractive. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Stead said in passing, I don't think he ever made an offer, he said in passing that he'd like to talk to that fellow the physician when his tour was up, because he would make a good director for a PA program. Very enthusiastic and very attractive fellow.
How do you see PAs as changing or transforming since the 1965 original class?
Well, it has become a much more formal experience. And it's now, you know, we set, the initial setup was to bring people in, corpsmen without degrees, give them a certificate which identified their range of experience and what their skills were, so that they could command a salary from a recognized program. I think in 1967, when the program went from medicine, because Stead retired, to community and family medicine, Dr. Bob Howard came on as the first sort of full-time doctor involved in the administration of the vehicle. And he quickly recognized, to make it a permanent, that our grant was running out. We had a 3-year grant and the stipend. He realized that the program needed some funding. So what he did, he set up a degree program, an advanced degree program, master's program, requiring the applicants have a BS, or a degree, and he set up a tuition. But while we still had some funding, he allowed people, very clever, allowed people to defer their tuition and pay it after they're out in the field. And the tuition was sufficiently high that it was a source of money, and the size of the program increased. It went from 4 to 16, and then, you know, I'm not sure what has gone from then. I was involved at that stage in the interview process, but administration, I'd moved on into something else. But he developed a funding that is still in place today, as far as I know. And the program has done, is independent now, fund-wise. I think it has its own money and has its own, not its own faculty, but is able to recruit faculty and I think reimburse them.
When you said you were interviewing applicants, was there anything in specific you were looking for?
Oh, just the same thing you do for interviewing people who realized what we were after and realized that they were going into a unique program and were going to be looked at hard, because it wasn't always a warm welcome. So we asked for people who were mature and were really committed to healthcare. They're not looking for just a way to get a job. We had a lot of applicants. They were, you know, after the Look article, and after the little blurb in Reader's Digest, and I, you know, it quoted me, but I don't remember talking to anybody in Reader's Digest. Anyway, after that, that came out, and it was about, you know, a 4-inch article. We had over 200 applicants for the second year. First year, we had 4 applicants, 2 of which we got in town from the Employment Commission, and 2 of them, one from Chicago and one from Oklahoma, I think. And I word of mouth, I guess. They heard about it in Grogan's, but they were the 4 applicants, and they were the only applicants we had.
Did you see a lot of ex-military coming through as applicants?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was in charge of it, so it was all military. First 4 and the second 16 were all corpsmen.
Really?
Yeah, and I think, I don't know about the third year. The second year, I remember, was all corpsmen. The third year, I don't know. And they were all male, simply because one of the ways we sold it was a career path for males in the healthcare field. But now, as nurses, a lot of nurses are males, there are a lot of PAs that are female, just like a lot of doctors are female. Natural evolution.
And the PA today, is that significantly different from the the PA you imagine?
Sure. I don't know. I've lost track of it, and I really have moved on to other things. But they're certainly screened differently. They're screened academically more than we did. We really didn't look too hard at their academic credentials in the first 2 years. Again, the third year was probably the last year that I was very active in the recruiting and the interview process. And I don't remember seeing transcripts. But now, yeah, it's a very well-recognized profession.
Sure. Was there anything?
And they went to physician assistant to physician associates.
Mm-hmm. I think they're back to physician's assistants.
Are they back to physician's assistants?
Yeah. Okay. Changed the name a couple of times.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to add about the formation of the program and your role in it?
Well, I think it was a lot of fun, and it was a unique opportunity to start something. I had no idea it was going to amount to what it did. You know, at the time we started the PA program, there was a nurse practitioner program in Colorado. And that was the only thing of this sort of dependent sort of paramedical. And so it made sense. We had some problem with the nursing profession, but again, I think that through Dr. Stead and Dr. Wallace, who came on as medical director, along with other things he had, they were able to answer the political questions locally. Because we were really concerned because we had a nursing shortage. And the one thing we didn't want to do is alienate the nurses. And we very carefully described the role of the PA as something different than what the nurse does. The nurse, you know, has got a segment of the patient she or he is responsible for. PA was always going to be, in our mind, working with a doctor at the doctor's discretion, never an independent. Well, that didn't last forever, but things change as they evolve.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate your time.
Okay. Is that what you need?